If I have any trouble with my voice this morning, it is not that I am unwell. I am totally healthy, but there are these little things flying around in the air, and they go into my nose, and then they fall down into my throat, and they make me have a gravelly throat. So I'll do the best I can. It should be fine. If I could mandate that everyone in the world, certainly everyone in the church, should know one story and only one story in the whole Bible, it would be the story that Alice read a moment ago, that is frequently referred to as the story of the prodigal son, but would probably be better known as the story of the two sons, or maybe the story of the gracious father, or maybe the story of the two sons and the gracious father. Gets kind of cumbersome. But all of the attention has been focused on the prodigal son, this son who wanders away from home. And it's such a rich and profound and important story. It tells us absolutely everything we need to know about the Christian message. It tells us everything we need to know about the journey of life, about what the journey of life is, about the purpose and function of the things in life that we go through. And it's hard to kind of know really where to sort of dip into this story and what parts to bring out. It's tempting to want to preach the entire story from beginning to end and touch on every detail, in which case I hope you brought your lunch, because we'll be here for a while. But the thing, really, there's the thing most of all that I would hope we might notice in this story is the principle that where we want to end up, where we want to end up in life, the goal, where we want to go in life, is where we started. Where we want to end up is where we began. On the cover of your pew leaflet this morning, I had Alice put a picture and a quote from the book of Genesis. The quote from Genesis 1:31 says, God saw everything that he had made, and indeed, it was very good. It's curious to me that when I put that verse, God saw everything that he had made, and indeed, it was very good, when I put that into Google and did an image search for that verse, this image on the cover of your pew leaflet was the only one in the whole of Google image search that I could find that had something included. What do you think is included in this image that is included in almost in no other image that I could find anywhere in the whole of Google image search? And hint, it's not a hammerhead shark. Hey? Panda bear? No, panda bear is a good guess. Anybody else?
Humans.
Think about that. And God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. Trees and plants and panda bears and animals and fish and all that stuff. And remember, at this point in the narrative, at this point in the story, human beings have been created. They'll get created again later, but they've been created by this point. And God saw everything that God had made, and God thought that it was indeed not just good, but very good. You all are included. I know some days it feels like the person sitting beside you might not be included, but everyone is included in very good. The younger son starts out at home. He starts out with his father. He starts out with this being who loves him and cherishes him and values him. He starts out with all the goodness and the strength and the beauty and the light and the truth of home. And that's where we all start. Our story does not start with bad. Our story starts with good. It'll get bad, but don't rush to that, okay? We don't have to hurry. We all know bad is coming. But it's important where we start. Because if you don't start out in the right place, you're not going to end up in the right place. If we don't start out with good, we're not going to end up with good. If we start out with original bad, we will never get to the beauty, truth, goodness, and light that is our true nature. It's true. By the time we get to Genesis chapter 3, we see that things do kind of start to wobble a little bit. Things kind of go a little bit awry. But we don't want to rush to that. And it's true that this son who had it all, who had a father who loved him, who had all of his needs provided for, who was lived a sustaining life, who was surrounded by support and encouragement and goodness and truth and beauty. This son, for some mysterious reason that nobody can explain, for some mysterious reason, this son comes to believe that what he has is not good enough. That where he is isn't adequate. He has still within him some little seed of desiring that feels like it's not been satisfied. He has somewhere deep within himself some little niggling sense that, you know, I bet there's something better out there. I bet there's something I could get that would make me more satisfied than I am right now. In an attempt to explain this strange determination we all have to wander away, the church came up with this concept, thanks to a gentleman named Augustine, in the 4th century, came up with this concept of what he called original sin. It's not in the Bible. Jesus never used it. It's not the beginning. But it was an attempt to simply explain, like, why do things get so messed up? Why do we all go so far away from that goodness, truth, beauty, light, and love that is our original creation? Why do we get so messed up? Why do we create such a mess in this life? Why are things so often awry? Why do we wander away? And the answer is, we don't know. It's just part of what happens. Now, there may be a good reason why it needs to happen, and we'll come to that in a moment. But we simply need to recognize, to begin with, that we start with goodness, we wander away from that goodness, and we don't know why. The young son leaves everything he has, everything that's provided for him, and he wanders away. But the wandering is not bad. The wandering is not something abhorrent and horrifying. The wandering serves a good purpose. The good purpose of this wandering is that we learn things when we wander. We wake up to new realities when we wander. When the son has gone off to a strange land, when he's completely lost his way, the text tells us that suddenly he came to himself. He woke up. He realized, you know what? This isn't working. Here I am in a far-off, strange land, cut off from everything that's given my life meaning and purpose and value. Here I am starving and in pain and lonely and broken. Something isn't working. And that's what wandering does for us. If we are willing to see, wandering will wake us up to the reality that doing it my way, doing it with my needs, wants, and desires at the center of the universe doesn't work. It never leads anywhere good and positive and life-giving. When I put what I want, give me my inheritance, give me what is mine, when I put that at the center of my life, I get lost. I wander away. But the wandering helps me wake up to the fact that although I started out beautiful and true and good and light, I became a 3-year-old. And then things started to go bad. And I need to know as an adult that it doesn't work if I stay as a 3-year-old. And the world is full of 3-year-old adults. I'm one of them myself a lot of the time. No. No, it's not fair. I don't want it this way. I want it to be different. I'm a 3-year-old adult. And if I don't wake up to that reality, then I just stay lost. I stay, in fact, where the older son stayed. The older son who never left home. The older son who stays clutching his bitterness and his resentment to his heart. The older son who stays with his worldview that says, it's not fair and there's not enough to go around and I never got my share and you should have blessed me the way you're blessing your son, your younger son. It's not fair and it's not right and I need more and I don't have enough and I don't like it the way it is. And he stamps his foot and refuses come into the banquet. He shuts himself out of the banquet because he's so determined to clutch his little sense of lack and his little sense of life being unfair and his little sense of being offended and being a victim. He's so intent on clutching that to his breast that he can't see the abundant celebration and gift of life that's pouring into his life every day. And you see, that's the thing we get to see when we start to wake up. First, we start to wake up and we see our need and we see the reality that we've wandered away. But then, if we continue to wake up, we see the amazing gift that life is. There's only one thing in this story that the Father ever does. All the Father ever does is give. That's what he does. That's his job. And that is the nature of life. Life gives. It gives and gives and gives, and we are the recipient of that gift that is life. We are the recipients of that love that is the center of the universe and of this nature of reality pouring down into our lives. And our only task is to open and receive. But it's hard for us to do that. It's hard for us to see and receive grace and goodness freely given. See, when this younger son, when he wakes up at first and he sees that his life isn't working and he determines to go back where he came from, to his father, he's not yet totally woken up. He's still 3/4 asleep. Because as he prepares to go back to his father, he says, I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy. I am no longer originally good. I have failed, and that has caused me to be drawn outside the circle of your love. And he's wrong. He doesn't yet fully know his father. He makes his way home, and he's coming along the road, approaching that place from which he left. And the story says But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his slaves, "Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate." The father doesn't care about the wandering. He's not interested in his sin. And he completely dismisses the whole worthiness system. That's over. It's done. Jesus took the worthiness system to the cross and it died. It was crucified. No more justification by law. No more attempting to be good enough. No more, "I don't belong, I don't fit in, I don't measure up, I'm not good enough, I've failed, I've hurt someone, I've let the world down, I've failed God." That's all over. That's all gone. You don't get to do that anymore. Stop. You are originally, fundamentally good. All you have to do is wake up and acknowledge those ways you've wandered away. And that's why we continue to use this confession thing that we have. Because all we're saying there is, yeah, I wandered away. I went astray. I forgot. I lost my way. I forgot that I have everything deep in my being that is the presence of God and that is the love and the truth and goodness. I forgot that I have everything I need. I forgot that I'm already home. I thought I had to go somewhere. So I'm sorry I did that. And as soon as we do that, our hearts awaken. And we know that the truth is we were made worthy, not by anything we ever did. Not by how smart we are. Not by how good looking we are. Not by how wealthy or powerful we are. We were made worthy only by the fact that we have been given this gift of life. And our challenge is to honor that gift, to respect that gift, and to live that gift in our lives. The father says to the older son, and it may be the most important verse, the most important statement in this story, might be the most important statement in the New Testament, might be the most important statement in the whole Bible. When the older son is whining and complaining and refusing to be embraced by his father, it's kind of a funny picture, isn't it? I want to embrace you. I want to put my arms out and draw you to my breast. And I go, "Nah, I don't think so. I don't want that today." The father says to the older son, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours." You are always with me. You are always with me. Should I say that again? You are always with me. You may wander. You may go astray. You may mess up. You may get confused. You may become completely delusional. You are always with me. And all that is mine, all that is mine, all of the love, all of the goodness, all of the truth, and all of the beauty, it's all yours. It's all in you. It's all there. It's just a question of coming back again and again and again to recognizing that reality. We'll never, ever understand life if we don't start with goodness, if we don't begin with the beauty, the truth, and the light that are born in our hearts. And that's why we do this weird thing Sunday after Sunday after. We come here to remember. We come here to be reawakened.
We come here to be smacked up the side of the head so that we can wake up and go, oh yeah, that's who I am. I forgot. I thought I was this ambitious little social climber. I thought I was this person who needed the biggest house on the block. I thought I was this person who needed to be strong and smart and capable. And you come to church and we go, bang, no, no, that's not who you are. Wake up. Who you are is original goodness, beauty, truth, light, and love. And that dwells in you. And that's why we have this funny communion thing. We take a piece of bread and a little sip of wine. And Jesus left us those things so that we might take into our very bodies this awareness that that goodness that was embodied in the person of Jesus actually lives in us. Jesus said, take my body, embody who I was, that my presence lives in you. Who I am dwells at the heart of your being. And that is always with you. And all that I have and all that I am is yours. We are vessels carrying the truth, beauty, goodness, light, and love of God at the depths of our being. We need day after day and moment after moment to wake up to that precious reality of seeing our true nature as good and good and very good. Amen.